Hi, and welcome to Sapphic Survival Guide, where we are queer to answer your questions. I'm Cheyenne.
And I'm Gina.
And class is now in session. We have another guest with us today, Michelle Hai. You might know her from Instagram at Polyamorous While Asian. Can you go ahead and introduce yourself and let everyone know what you're all about?
Thanks for having me on. My name's Michelle Hai. I'm from Portland, Oregon, she/her pronouns, and I've been being actively non-monogamous since about 2012, which is wild to think about.
That is wild, yeah.
Yeah, it's a very wild
A long
time
time.
flies when you're learning a lot of lessons. but yeah, I have been running Polyamorous While Asian since February 2020, and then the world shut down and we were all at home. And I live with my two cats, Reggie and Baz. And yeah, that's me in a nutshell.
Oh yeah. What about zodiac sign?
Oh yes. Taurus. I'm a Taurus.
Taurus. Okay.
Oh,
Love
okay.
that. Yeah. So can you let us know a little bit about like your queer journey, but then also your polyamorous journey and how both of those came into fruition in your life?
Yeah, I mean, I think those for me are very intertwined. I think for all intents and purposes, growing up, I was still on like the monogamy train. And also, I guess, kind of like the hetero train, but I think I just didn't think about it too much. But I will say that when I would like, exploring yourself as you're young, and I would like often fantasize about like men and women, but it never I don't know. It never spiked anything in me that was like, oh God, I'm gay or I'm bi or anything. I was just like, just kind of doing my own thing. And I tended to be super private about a lot of things anyway. But yeah, so I think I came out as non-monogamous first. Like my first partner introduced non-monogamy to me through the book Sex at Dawn. And so it's where I learned like non-monogamy, polyamory, all of this whole new world. Several years later, I'm dating a few people, and among those are a couple. One's non-binary, the other's like trans femme. And it wasn't until maybe at least a year into more or less seeing them that I was like, oh, duh, Michelle. You're bisexual. Like, what do you? It just felt so natural, I think, because of that those relationships felt so organic that I didn't feel like I had to think about it, and it just felt so natural and easy, that it was like I was literally in a cuddle puddle with them. I'm like, oh, duh, Michelle. I just had never used that word for myself and had never just explicitly thought it to myself. But yeah, it felt silly, but I definitely knew I was non-monogamous before I knew I was bisexual.
Yeah. Was your partner that introduced you to that book, were they non-monogamous? Is that why
So
they
yeah, so he came across Sex at Dawn only a few months before I did. And that's just one of many reasons why we're no longer together.
Okay. It was just like too soon. Do you
Both too
recommend
soon,
getting with
yeah.
someone who kind of has more experience in like polyamory and non-monogamy versus like just trying it out with someone together?
Yeah, so I think what's most important is finding people with compatible wants and needs relationship-wise, regardless of the amount of experience that they have. I think as someone who's been doing it for about 12 years now, I do prefer when people have at least some experience and have some understanding of what they are looking for in relationships and what they're not looking for. But yeah, there's just so many things wrong with that first relationship where it was very much like I think non-monogamy in general, we're having to kind of create our own blueprint a lot of the time. And because this guy was like 14 years older and he was like a lot more experienced with like life stuff in general, traveled the world, all that good stuff, I just kind of went along with what he was saying and doing. And so I highly do not recommend that. But yeah, so I think what's most important is just finding people with compatible values and compatible relationship desires. And like if you want non-monogamy, then you must be with someone who is either okay with you being non-monogamous while also being monogamous, or they are also very enthusiastically non-monogamous.
Yeah. Do you have any advice for people who are kind of like, I could take it or leave it, or they're like, I could be non-monogamous, but my partner definitely doesn't want that?
Yeah, yeah, there are plenty of people who are, I mean, God, I don't know the non-monogamy terms, but who are
like switch about it.
Yeah, basically, yeah, switchy about, you know, monogamy or non-monogamy. There are a lot of people who really are like, you know, take it or leave it. And again, it's just about, you know, compatible values. And so like, and very often we find ourselves in monogamous relationships, and then one person is like, oh, there's this non-monogamy stuff and it really resonates with me, but yeah, I don't know if my partner will be okay with that. I don't want to hurt them. I want to explore this thing, but I also really appreciate this relationship that we have. So it's a lot of, there are a lot of different scenarios. It can be very tricky, but ultimately, like, I don't often like to say like absolutes, but you can't be fully satisfied in a relationship that you don't have like mutual agreements with, or that like if someone is maybe non-monogamous by orientation, you know, they're not ambiamorous, but they just are non-monogamous. Like, it's just less likely that they'll be happy in a purely monogamous relationship. And it's also less likely for the monogamous person to be like satisfied enough in a relationship where they know that the partner is non-monogamous by orientation. Yeah.
Yeah, we got a question for one of our past episodes where someone said they wanted to tell their wife that they wanted to open up the relationship, but they knew for a fact she didn't have any interest. Do you feel like that's like a kiss of death?
So I think trying to move away from more, I guess, like straight and mononormative relationships where it's like, oh, you're either together and fully romantic and sexual, or you have no relationship at all. Where I think in a lot of more like queer circles, it's so much more common to be like friends with your exes and whatnot, or to just have a very different relationship. So I think it's, I don't know, not necessarily the kiss of death, but, you know, I think there's at least definitely the possibility of like a sort of de-escalation there, or at least if the two people still care about each other and still want to be with each other, it will look very different, very likely, than it used to look. So I wouldn't say it's a kiss of death. I would say that it's it sounds
there's some
like,
compromise.
Yeah, there's some compromise, needs to happen. But also there's like a new chapter unfolding for the both of them. Yeah,
yeah.
Because you said the word de-escalating, that's in another question that we had gotten from a listener on how to deal with somebody de-escalating your relationship because they found a new partner. And I'm interested in your not only advice to that, but even just the idea of like hierarchical structures within polyamory, because I kind of see, if I'm honest, both sides. Like, I've seen it work for somebody where there really is no hierarchy and that's great. But like my partner and I are, I'd say we're like, we're non-monogamous. I wouldn't say we're poly, but there's absolutely a structure in that. Like, that's my, like, she is the most important thing to me. Like, she's so primary. It's, and to the point where we're not even really open to being poly and having partners, and it works for us. But I know that some people don't like that hierarchical structure. So then de-escalating, that kind of plays into it. So I'm curious on your thoughts on all that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, oh God. I mean, you are probably aware of all the discourse, all the discourse around like hierarchy, in polyamory. My stance is that I don't prefer hierarchy. And I think there are a lot of ways in which hierarchy is used to be fairly abusive. But that isn't to say that hierarchy is just inherently, like, all hierarchies are inherently abusive. I'm not saying that. The important thing in hierarchical or more non-hierarchical, the main thing is to treat everyone that you are like in connection with equitable respect. I say equitable rather than equal, because in all relationships, you know, even outside of the monogamy, non-monogamy spectrum, like, everyone has different needs, everyone has different wants. So like, even if you could give everyone the exact same thing, that would not satisfy everyone. Mm-hmm. If anything, it wouldn't satisfy anyone. So when it comes to hierarchy in non-monogamy, if everyone is fully on board, if there is clear, transparent communication about what's what, if there are clear expectations and agreements that are set, then that tends to be more ethical. The thing that a lot of people have issue with is, say, you know, a primary couple where they always prioritize each other's needs and they don't express that they do that. Mm-hmm. They, you know, kind of discard thirds, which are usually like bisexual women, where it's like, mm-hmm. oh, you know, we have fun. We maybe like use it to fix our relationship or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then they just like, all right, we had fun. Goodbye. We don't really care about your needs as much. And mm-hmm. we aren't interested right. in a relationship with you very much. So that's where it becomes shitty, really. But otherwise, it's like, where I stand with the hierarchy thing is that, like, yeah, especially in a more mononormative society, there are going to be more hierarchical dynamics. That doesn't mean that all of them have to be unethical, but I think people in more hierarchical dynamics in some ways have to be more mindful and work a little harder to practice non-monogamy more ethically. Yeah.
Right. That makes sense, just because you're giving your one partner, you know, your kind of, what's what I'm looking for, your initial priority, doesn't mean that the respect shouldn't be level all around, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Like, how you communicate with anybody you're interacting should be like completely transparent, so to speak.
Yeah. And it's like for example, if like people de-escalate for a whole bunch of different reasons. Mm-hmm. But like, if I were to encounter someone who de-escalated because they found a new partner, like if I had gotten any whiff of that beforehand, they would not have made it through the vetting process for me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's different for everybody, but like, I'm just not interested in that. You know, like I'm fine if that intention is very clear from the beginning, where it's like, maybe they're ultimately monogamous, but like, mm-hmm. you know, they're having their hot girl summer or whatever. And they're just like having their slutty phase or whatever. And I'm like, okay, sure, we can have fun. And that understanding is there, where it's like, when you find a romantic partner, like, this connection will probably end, and at least I can be aware of that and I can have my boundaries around that. Mm-hmm. But people who, and you know, like we discover different things about ourselves at different times of our lives. So, you know, maybe when you start a connection, you are more open to non-monogamy, but eventually you find like, oh, I think romantically I am more monogamous. But mm-hmm. the thing again is to just be compassionate and to be communicative and to treat people you're in connection with yeah, the respect they deserve.
Are there any other red flags like that you can think of, just like off the top of your head, besides like the super obvious ones? Because I feel like that was like, oh, that's interesting, I can see how that would be kind of like a yellow flag thing.
yeah, I mean, I think like red flags can definitely be subjective. Like, for example, it's a red flag to me if a person even puts like apolitical on their dating app or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, some people don't mind that at all. But yeah, like, so, I mean, I think it is all very personal, you know, okay. with like personal values and things like that, which yes. isn't to say that there aren't patterns, you know, like you're talking earlier about someone who's like trying to get into the non-monogamy thing, but they're only like a few months in and they're like just diving right into it without really doing a lot of the internal work, without doing a lot of the homework, without being communicate enough with partners or potential partners. Because that partner, my first boyfriend, yeah, he had already had a partner when mm-hmm. he introduced that book to me, and so it was like this sneaky way to be like,
oh, okay, hey. yeah, by the way,
oh, FYI. No.
yeah, that's no good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in the past I had a boyfriend and a girlfriend at one point, and I feel like I was kind of like in that like new relationship energy phase with the girlfriend, and it was before I had like realized I was like fully a lesbian. So I felt like I was definitely prioritizing her more in the relationship, but she was definitely Like experiencing some jealousy, and there was, I don't know, I think some poor communication at that time. Obviously, we were like 21, so it was a while ago. But do you have any advice for navigating jealousy when one partner is like polyamorous and one isn't? Because at that point, it was kind of, we were like in a V, so like they were both dating me, but they weren't dating each other. But like they were all cool with each other. Like she knew that we lived together when we got together, but it kind of felt like as time passed, it was more and more of an issue with her. And I was like, I feel like I'm giving you all of my time and attention. Like he's kind of on the back burner right now, and he's cool with it actually. But like I don't know. I wasn't sure how to like help her see that like I saw them as equals and that he wasn't like my primary just because we lived together. Like I was like, you are both like priorities to me. I mean, maybe he was a little bit on the back burner because I was like excited and you know, but like he was cool with
New
that.
relationship energy, right?
I mean, that can be tough. And it's like, I feel like I would have to learn like a lot more of like the specifics of what went down and things like that. But oftentimes, I like to say that jealousy isn't doesn't disqualify someone from being non-monogamous. I feel like a lot of people worry about that. But jealousy often is some indicator of some need or needs not being met. And ultimately, like if she was feeling jealous, it would be, up to her to be able to figure out what is at the root of that. And as a partner or whatever, supporting and helping her in that journey or discovery as best as you can. But ultimately, like at least that aspect, that percentage of the onus has to be on her of like, what is it that I'm worried about? What is it that I'm scared of? What is it that I'm maybe feeling like I'm lacking at the moment? Because then at that point, then there can be a back and forth of like, oh, okay, how can we, work toward something that's mutually beneficial, that can help you, that is still within my capacity and within my boundaries. But yeah, at the end of the day, it does have to be like a back and forth. And like, yeah, both people have to hold up their end of the sort of kind of that sort of unspoken relationship contract of like, okay, I'm here to help you, but you have to, let me know what I can do to help. Otherwise, I can't read your mind, unfortunately.
I'm in a monogamous relationship now, but like it's so I'm a people pleaser and I like, always want to take responsibility for other people's like emotions and stuff, but it's hard when, the other person won't let you help them. So that's like I feel like a really good starting place for those kinds of conversations. Have you, oh God, sorry, Dana.
In the just leading off of that question, if you're in the situation where there was something that happened that then jealousy was then experienced from one of the partners, and you were able to talk through what needs weren't being met or what problems needed to, be addressed, the person who is in the partnership that not the one who felt the jealousy, but the one who was helping to reassure that jealousy didn't need to be there, so to speak. How does that person in the relationship deal with like feelings of guilt in a sense of being like, oh, I might have done something that was within boundary, but now I've made this my partner jealous and I'm feeling bad about that. Like, I think it's easy to reassure the jealousy, like the person who's jealous, but how do you then reassure yourself that you're not being like selfish or I don't asking for too much? Like, what does that combo look like?
I mean, as someone who is like also recovering people pleaser and in codependent relationships and things, and I also, even though I talk about this stuff online, I always say that it's easier said than done because I tend to be conflict avoidant, and it is hard to have these conversations and to like take up space. So I think in my experience, the game changer was having partners who were equally enthusiastic about doing the work together and equally enthusiastic about, getting to the bottom of it. Like one of my partners, like got a little software engineer brain. Whenever there's like a you know, sort of more heated discussion, he brings out his notebook so that he can write things down so that he will not forget, you know, maybe something that I said, so that he can then repeat it and be like, okay, as I understand it, you know, this, 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 and this. And you know, everyone's different. Everyone does discussions differently. I do benefit from that more like organized approach. But yeah, a lot of it is just having a partner who has, you know, that room for that compassion, that understanding that like we're all humans, and as humans there is no avoiding harming one another, you know, even accidentally, like everything that we do, like it will create harm to some degree. And oftentimes you know, we believe that we're acting within certain boundaries or whatever, and then new boundaries come up, and the only way we know that is because, oh, damn it, we stepped into that hole and now we've got like a sprained ankle and we gotta deal with that now. So the best thing that you can do is just realize that you learn as you go. You can't even, you know, the whole like best laid plans of mice and men, like there's just no planning for everything, you know, there isn't planning for every contingency. There's no way to avoid harm. So the best thing is to be in a relationship where you like, for example, I know that certain partners will, like, they never intend to hurt me. That I know that if they knew that they hurt me, they would be mortified.
Right.
And there wouldn't be, like, that gaslighting or just, like, oh, but it's your fault, blah, blah, blah. It's like, oh, you know, it doesn't even matter, like, it. Because we also have this understanding of like there isn't like a blame game necessarily. You know, some people have, you know, different responsibilities for certain situations, but it's not like, oh, this is all your fault or you always do this, or blah, blah, blah. It's like, okay, we did a thing. There's a conflict. There are hurt feelings, which are valid. How can we both work together on the same side, on the same team, instead of like on opposite sides of this field to come up with a solution? Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. Makes sense. Yeah. Is there other, I'm just going to keep asking questions around jealousy, even though I know there's like so much more to talk through, but what's some of the language that's typically used to like discuss jealousy without just saying like, I'm jealous that this happened? Cause I feel like it's hard to get past that surface level.
Yeah. I mean, it's like everything, it's a practice. And like the whole identifying like, okay, what is underneath this jealousy? You know, what is this jealousy trying to tell me about? Like for me, the usual suspects are always fear of rejection and fear of abandonment. So I always know that it has something to do with that. And that's just through, you know, therapy and stuff and, you know, working on relationships. So I know that I can come to partners and be like, oh, I'm having these feelings. And, you know, do you have time to talk about them right now or later or something? And sometimes I do this over text, because sometimes I find it easier to have these discussions over text so I can like think on my own and edit. And
then you can look back at it later and remind yourself. Yeah.
Exactly. I've definitely done that. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, wow. Okay. You know, this is a good reminder. So it's all deeply personal and individual how people can go about that or what language they use. Like sometimes there have been times where like we will have the conversation in person and I want to, like, you know, maybe we're talking on the couch and I want to lie down on the couch and like put my head in like their lap while also like physically closing my eyes so that I can think, to just like block everything out so I can think and whatnot. Or like, you know, have them like kind of like gently pet my hair while I'm trying to express my difficult feelings. So yeah, it can be, it's different for everybody. But a lot of it is just these very core things. I think a lot of times they speak to like childhood wounds. You know, it's different if you have like, you know, trauma and this like brings up trauma and stuff like that. So yeah, again, the game changer is having a partner who's like willing to work with you. And then the language just kind of follows from there.
Yeah. I know like every scenario is going to be different because of our past, but do you feel like a lot of the time it does come back to like the rejection and fear of abandonment wounds? Because I feel like for me, that's like what it would probably come back to also. And it seems like that's like a pattern for a lot of people when I hear people talk about non-monogamy and polyamory. Would you say those are like the most common things you see come up for people? Or I don't know, is there anything else that you have seen that you can think of off the top of your head?
I would say that's probably some of the most common like underlying reasons as well. And I think it's also important that like there is a difference. I try to be careful in talking about relationships and like, oh, these shoulds and shouldn'ts and red flags and best practices, especially because how so much of this can be twisted in abusive relationships, where so much of the advice about like, oh, trust your partner or communicate, blah blah blah, like can just be like, it's just we're just living in the upside down when it comes to more abusive relationships. So like, sometimes when there's jealousy and it's like, oh, fear of like abandonment or rejection, I try not to speak as if like gaslighting a person out of like, oh no, they won't abandon you or reject you. It is, it
Because it could
depends.
happen.
It depends on the dynamic. It depends on the person.
Yeah, there's a lot of nuance. It's hard to say for
It
sure,
is. It
you
is hard to
know,
say, but
but
I will, going back to your point where I think, fear of rejection and abandonment is probably, some of the most common like underlying
And that
feelings
makes sense, like
behind jealousy.
evolutionarily and like from like a sociology standpoint too, of like, you know, being like ousted from the group or a pairing or whatever. So that does make sense, like on a macro level, but obviously like on a micro level, everyone is gonna have different reasons and different aspects to that.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when we're raised and, we're like monogamy is king, and it's just, so like the group to be ousted from is just a group of two. So like, of course, there's this like scarcity of like, oh God, like if I'm ousted from this group, then I'm just all alone and floundering in the middle of the ocean. So yeah, I feel like one of the reasons why I like non-monogamy is just this idea that it helps, I think, promote this idea that we can expand our circles and expand our ideas of relating. And I think like, good relationship practice is just good relationship practice, whether it's monogamous or non-monogamous. And it's like, I don't believe that everyone is just some sort of non-monogamous. Like I do believe that, monogamy is natural in humans to a degree. So like, so even expanding our ideas beyond like the couple into friendships, into, I mean, all the blurred lines that can happen between all relationships between people that we like, which I think, again, like I think is a bit more common in like queer community than in general.
What other things do you love about non-monogamy?
Oh man. Let's see. I always have someone to, babysit my cats if I'm gone.
That's nice.
The different streaming service access, that's pretty nice. But I mean, in general, I think a lot of it is just this,
Like community is like,
in general, I think that's what I love to emphasize most about non-monogamy, that it's just about community in general. Like if we stop thinking about this as like the monogamy, non-monogamy binary, like it's just talking about like the different structures of relationships that people prefer, and the different structures of relationships that can maybe, like if we, think about toxic monogamy, that kind of lead more toward like isolation, and that like,
Nuclear family being
that
prioritized versus over like platonic love. I didn't really think of it that way. Like, it would be nice to have people that you could really rely on for those things or like share resources like that. And I feel like in like the typical like monogamous structure, you don't necessarily have that unless, you know, you are one of those weird adults that happen to have like a group of friends still. And I'm saying weird in quotes, like I don't think it's weird, I'm actually very jealous, but like you have a group of friends that you see regularly. I feel like that's so rare to have, you know, those kind of people in your community who are there for you in that way? Are there any other like little things like that you can think of?
I feel like it's also just nice to know that I feel like it just kind of like expands the rules and expands the boundaries a bit, where I don't have to feel guilty or whatever to just have like a flirty conversation with someone that may or may not go somewhere. Like maybe it's just like, well, flirty, maybe we don't even exchange names, maybe it turns into something, whatever. Regardless, like it's all fine, like it's all within bounds. And it's like, as long as I'm, you know, communicative and you know, respectful of everyone, there's just nothing wrong with that. And yeah, you know, going back to your point about like the friends thing, a common, I think, disparaging comment that I've gotten and that I see is like, oh, isn't this just having friends? And I'm like, yeah, it is kind of just like having friends, but I don't think of that in a disparaging way. I don't think that makes these relationships any less important or valuable. Yeah, I see a lot of my partners as friends, and like I kind of like that idea of that more like friendship first style of dating anyway, because like if you're gonna spend time with these people and maybe be vulnerable with these people, you better like them, and you better actually like spending time with them, and you know, be able to shoot the shit with them and stuff like that, and be comfortable and have this kind of like oasis from the chaos of the world. So yeah, I think non-monogamy in general, it's just nice to have that more, I don't know, I don't think it's accurate to say more laid back, because there's that stereotype where we just like constantly talking about a relationship, but it is simultaneously a lot of hard work, and it's so freeing and like rejuvenating and relaxing at the same time.
That's an interesting point that you made though, because like I consider my partner like my best friend, and like so many straight people, like you hear them say like, oh, my husband's my best friend, but it's like it's wrong if you're like not straight, not monogamous, you know, like then it's like, isn't that just friends? But like everyone is like, I want my partner to be my best friend. But then that's, you know, an issue for other people. I kind of wanted to go back to coming out and ask, I'm assuming that you are out since you've been doing this for like 10 years, you have a whole Instagram dedicated to this, but how did coming out as both polyamorous and bisexual, like I assume they happened at different times since you kind of came to the realization at different times, but how did that look for you, and do you have any advice, especially if, like, I'm assuming you have to keep coming out because of like the monogamous like heteronormative society we live in, but yeah, can I bother you to hear a little bit of that?
I mean, I don't think I ever had one like coming out instance really. Yeah, I feel like it's just been like just little coming out things here and there over the years, and it's very selective. Like, I mean, you know, especially like pre the Instagram page, very selective. But yeah, so like, you know, my family, the only people in my immediate family who know are my closest sister, and we're just like, we're super close, we know everything, so she has known from not quite the beginning, but like at least a couple years in, about the non-monogamy part. And and then she like outed me to our dad, which was like, which was okay. Like sometimes I wish she was still in contact with like my mom and that side, so that she could just like out me.
Do the work basically.
Yeah, do the work. And then you like, if they want to confront me about it, they can. Whatever. But yeah, so like my sister knows, and she knows about my partners and stuff. My dad knows in that more general sense. Like he doesn't know any details or anything. But yeah, so anyone that I'm friends with knows that I'm like polyamorous and bisexual. Otherwise, I don't often feel the need to bring it up. Oftentimes because it's like, if I'm not sure that they'll receive it well, I just don't care to bring it up, because I don't feel any less valid. I just like don't want to do that work, you know? You know, same with like, you know, non-monogamy or bisexuality. It's like, if I feel like you're going to be weird about it, I'm not going to talk about it with you.
Yeah, fair.
But yeah,
Do you think
I'm good.
living
Yeah.
alone or like with your cats makes that less complicated too? Because you don't have to like if you're like seen with one person out in public, they're not like, oh, you're cheating on the person you live with. And then you don't have to like expand. Or have you ever had any experiences like that where someone who didn't know saw you with multiple partners and were like confused?
I don't think I've ever been confronted about that, but some partners and I have like wondered that because like one partner and I would go to this place that he and his spouse would also go to like regularly. So we would often wonder like, what do the bartenders think? You know, like does he think that you're just like cheating on the both of us or whatever? And we have a laugh about it. And but yeah, I don't think I've ever been confronted about that. So if anyone has ever thought that, I don't know. So it's not my problem. Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Are you a casual sex haver, or are you more like you want more of like a deeper connection, deeper like beyond sex, I should say, connection within the people that you're involved with?
Yeah, I have a I have no qualms with going home with someone on the first date.
No.
You know, just like, yeah, I love casual sex. I love it. I love the freedom of it. I love, because I also, and this is something like a label that I've been chewing on for the past year or so, is like, I think I lean more toward like demi-romantic. And so I think like sex for me is a lot easier than romantic relationships, because it's like purely physical and it's like, you know, if you so desire, it's like, it can be like a more service level thing. And I think I indulged in that more like in my early 20s. And these days, I do prefer having at least, you know, again, talking about that friendliness aspect of it, where it's like, oh, you know, we can actually sit down and talk and laugh and have fun and then also have sex. Like, that's great. You know, I love, you know, with casual sex, I love friends with benefits, like actual friends with benefits. And it's almost like sex with benefits because the benefit is friendship.
Oh, that's a cute way to look at it.
Yeah, so I do love you know, that more you know, because I'm like a solo polyamorous, so I just kind of like do my own thing a lot anyway. I feel like I'm more of like that I call myself like the freelance partner in a way. And so yeah, like I appreciate I try to appreciate connections for what they are. If it's like a connection that is like only good for one really awesome night, great. If it's a connection where we meet each other, you know, a few times a year, but like every time we meet up, we just like, you know, catch up and it's almost like we never had any time apart, like that's great too. There are some people that I've only seen maybe on average like once or twice a year. But like it's always really nice. And even more than just surface level, you know, like we'll talk about life stuff, and you know, sometimes people have like kids or like their kids are growing up, and like there's this one guy who, like, when I first started seeing him, his like daughter was like 4 or 5 years old, and she's like a teenager now, and it's wild. And like I've never met her or anything, but it's still like wild to think about the passage of time in that way. But yeah, you know, love casual sex. I'm a big proponent of casual sex, but like casual sex with that conscientiousness and, you know, still prioritizing actual connection and respect. Yeah.
How would
Yeah.
you handle it if, like, you, I want to say you first, but also, like, if the other person, like, if you are like setting this like boundary ahead of time, like, I'm not trying to get attached. And, like, as a solo poly person, like, maybe you are more open to that, but maybe this person just like wants to hook up and like isn't ready to like move forward. But, like, one of you starts to like catch feelings. Is there, like a mental like script or anything you do to like kind of like stop yourself? Like, I don't know how to word that, but just like, is there anything that you can do to de-escalate those feelings from growing into something more? Or do you just kind of like let yourself feel them, whether it's reciprocated or not? Like, how do you handle that kind of
Yeah.
dynamic?
Yeah. So I tend, so again, with like the demi-romantic thing, like it does just take me a long time to, I think, have romantic feelings for someone. And part of that sometimes is just like, oh, whether or not the other person wants that. And then my brain will consider like, oh, do we want that? Because otherwise, I don't know. I think the way that I approach all like relationships, even the more casual ones, is that like, yeah, I hang out with you because I like hanging out with you. And eventually that kind of becomes no different than like enjoying hanging out with a partner. You know, there's some differences, you know, with partners that I've been with, you know, for like 8+ years, we have that much more rapport. There's much more history. There's much more that we can go off of. But like, yeah, if I like hanging out with someone and then they catch feelings or whatever, or they want it to be a more romantic relationship, like if they tell me that and it's something that I'm interested in with them, because you know I don't want to be in a romantic relationship with everyone because I don't feel like it's, you know, I would have my reasons for feeling like it wouldn't be compatible in that way, where it's like, oh, what we have I think is more sustainable for what we've got. But like if you're interested in this, like we can talk about it. I am always like, even though I'm bad at initiating things, I am always open to like talking about it if the other person brings it up. And I like to try to be as honest as I can, you know, but not being like grossly blunt or whatever. But yeah, if a person wants to be more of like a partner type, I think almost always happy to have that discussion.
I
I
really
think
like
there
the
have.
language of like the sustainability that I feel like that's really nice. Like it's like a way to like put that boundary in place without fully just like shutting down the relationship or like making them feel like rejected. Like it feels like a very like I value you and what we have. And I don't know if it would work putting it up that relationship escalator or whatever.
And I try to be very upfront about like that more demi-romantic part, because there have been times where like a partner is ready to say I love you a lot sooner than I would be. And you know, and there have been these kind of like awkward conversations about that, where it's like you know, talking about our feelings around that and where we're at and what we want to be, if things are missing, if you know how we want to proceed. And yeah, there's like one partner where I think it was maybe almost a year after that, where I like finally said I love you back, and like we've been together for I think about 8 years now. And yeah, this is the one that was part of like the couple that I was seeing, and I was like, oh, duh, you're bisexual. But yeah, so there, I think it all comes down to like communication and like being really honest about compatibility and being honest about like what you want, what they want. Will this actually work for what, you know, do our ideas of what this relationship is or can be, are they similar or compatible enough? Because if they aren't, then sometimes that is like the hard truth of like, well, okay, maybe we aren't, you know, good for each other. Or it could be that maybe we aren't good for each other in that way, but we can still hang out. We can still like, you know, get snacks and watch movies together. We can still snuggle, but like, you know, it just feels so a la carte, you know, how you have relationships, even more casual relationships. So yeah, I, you know, as a solo polyamorous, as like more demi-romantic, I am still open to people, you know, wanting to have those more consistent and deeper relationships, but we just got to talk about it.
I also want to ask, since your Instagram is polyamorous while Asian, have you had trouble like meeting other people of color in like the polyamorous and non-monogamous community? And like, I'm sure you've had a lot of people like message you and are like, hey, like, thank you for putting yourself out there and like showing me that I'm not alone. But do you have advice specifically for meeting other Asian people, other people of color, and dealing with, I'm sure, all of the xenophobia and fetishization that comes with being in a majority of white community?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's rough. It's hard out there. It's because yeah, like, you know, Portland, very white city. And like I think polyamory in general, at least, you know, the polyamorous who tend to go to like meetups and events and are more out about it tend to be white. You know, which is, you know, no hate to white people. I have partners who are white. but I would say that having this Instagram has definitely helped me, like as someone as who is more introverted and has like more trouble like getting out there, putting myself out there, having the Instagram has been very helpful. So that like it has allowed me to meet a lot of really cool people, a lot of like POC who are polyamorous and who are also in Portland, and like we are few, but you know, we are strong. And like it's like that's one of the reasons why I created the page, because I'm like, I know we're out there. We are out there. Like, I'm doing this thing. I'm not the only one doing this thing. We're out there. So I would say my advice for people is to be like super intentional, super, super intentional, and even like pickier, like even swiping on Field or Tinder or whatever, just being very intentional about like, oh yes, POC. All right. Let's look at the bio. All right. Swipe right. You know? And yeah, like swiping left on a lot of like white people. And it's like a huge, like with the apps in general, the huge numbers game. But, you know, also trying to go out to different meetups that, you know, maybe aren't like polyamorous focused, because those aren't quite as common. But like in Portland, there's like the PDX, like queer, like Asian happy hour that happens about once a month. And like for Pride, we had this like, you know, it wasn't POC only, but it was definitely like POC centric kind of dance party. And that was such a great space. It was such a wonderful space. So it's like, you know, trying to find meetups like that. And, you know, trying to find meetups that are like more POC focused, doing things that you like, where it's like, oh, book clubs or karaoke nights or board game nights or something like that. And it really is dependent on location. There are some locations where this is a lot easier, of course, to do in person than others. And but yeah, I mean, online, you know, there's like growing online community as well. There are other like, you know, POC who are like desperate for other polyamorous POC in their lives. And so like we're out here, and it sometimes is a matter of like digging around, but like it's there.
Yeah. So our final question then, and this is probably a big one to answer, but is there any advice you would give to either young queer people, young people who are just getting started in ethical non-monogamy, or a younger version of you, you know, yourself?
I think, you know, starting backwards, like advice to myself that I think is good advice for everyone is that boundaries are everything, and boundaries lay the foundation for, you know, how you go about your life and how you go about relating with other people. And if you're ever with someone who is, has like a disdain for boundaries, run away. So it's like getting to know what you like and what you don't like, what your capacities are, is like, is huge. Like once you have more of a secure idea of that, it just makes like kind of getting into relationships or choosing relationships, and, you know, kind of not choosing relationships that wouldn't be good or compatible, like it just makes that a whole lot easier. I mean, it doesn't make, you know, relationships just easy, but I think so much of our relationship anxiety comes from the unknown, right? The unknown about them, the unknown about us, how we react, how they react. So yeah, having a more secure foundation in your boundaries is a huge game changer.
I don't usually ask questions like off of the last question, but I know you said earlier that you were a recovering people pleaser, and do you have any like specific advice for like sticking to those boundaries as a recovering people pleaser?
For me personally, how I go about it is remembering how bad it felt to not uphold my boundaries, and not in a way that's like, oh, it was all my fault or whatever, or that it was all their fault, but just remembering that like, wow. Yeah. Especially being able to compare and contrast with my, you know, first unhealthy, very unhealthy relationship versus like my more sustainable relationships today, where it's like, oh, how different it feels to one, be able to have and express my boundaries and have people who respect it, versus, you know, not having boundaries because I was like 18 years old and wanted to be open to everything. And having someone who, like, even if I had boundaries, would just kind of bulldoze through them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's good advice, though.
Remembering that helps a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know we kind of mentioned your Instagram a few times, but can you let everyone know where to find you, or if you'd like to plug anything else, feel free to do that here.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I primarily live on Instagram. I'm not a multi-platform queen. I don't have the energy or the time, like, attention span to do that. But yeah, so I'm on Instagram, polyamorouswhileasian. And if I ever do post like long form stuff, I'll post it on my website, polyamorouswhileasian.com, so that you don't have to just live on Instagram. But yeah, that's where people can find me.
Thank you.
Perfect. And so thank you so much for answering all the questions. It was super informative. And anyone listening, if you have future questions for any topic at all, you can send them to us via email, sapphicsurvivalguide@gmail.com, or you can DM us through any social media, Sapphic Survival Guide on all platforms except for X, which is just at Sapphic Survival. You can send in your question via phone at 724-209-7372. And if you want more, you can go to patreon.com/sapphicsurvivalguide. And for me, I'm anywhere online at The Libregina, including my website, thelibregina.com.
And you can find me, Cheyenne, at HotMessBean on pretty much any social media platform. With that, class is now dismissed.